The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Welcome back to Spin the Rally Pod. I have returned. Lisa O'Sullivan, the Rally Fan, is back in the house with our top team, Colin Clark, voice of Rally, Luke Barry, deputy editor of Dirtfish.com, no less, and our former motorsport team boss, George Donaldson, all in attendance. And I have to say, guys, it's really nice to be back.
Oh, it's fabulous to have you back, Lisa.
Lovely to have you back, Lisa. Lisa, I have to pull you up on something, though. It's a bit too early in the show to pull you up on something.
Nope, you can fire away. Are you embracing
right.
your Lisa-ness?
I have to pull you up on something. Well, I am a little bit. It's actually quite a nice point. You did that lovely podcast with Bex Williams, didn't you?
I did.
And I think a lot of our listeners that listened to that actually got to know quite a lot more about you, as well as about Bex, obviously. And I had a note from one saying, what is this nonsense about Lisa O'Sullivan being the humble rally fan? She's much more than that. Much more than that. She's been around rallying for 20-odd years, and I never knew that. So I do think, Lise, we have to come up with a new title for you, because it really doesn't reflect, you know, what you are and where you're at in your rallying kind of career.
Okay. Right, well, we'll have a think about that. But let's face it, we're all just humble rally fans. We're just lucky to be talking about rallying, aren't we? Except some of you have got very impressive titles. Luke Barry, deputy editor of Dirtfish.com. Does that mean that you have the budget strings?
No, it doesn't, sadly. Otherwise, you might find me in more corners of the world than I have currently visited.
So, yes, no. Indeed.
Yeah, you and George would have launched your breakaway duo.
That's it.
It's happening, yeah. There'll be a social media campaign soon. If anybody wants to support it, we'll think of a catchy name for that as well. George and I go travelling the world to obscure rallies.
I suspect we should start off just managing to meet up successfully for that coffee, seeing as we're only a few miles apart and we've not managed that yet. And maybe even go to a local rally here in Scotland, because they do exist every now and again.
You don't have to tell the world, George, that we're that bad.
I'm up in Scotland next week, boys. I think we should organise something. We should organise.
Colin, you are not going to get the kudos of being the catalyst that gets Luke and I together. You're not getting that kudos. Sorry, you're excluded.
I'm going for it, George.
I love the way that Colin's saying that without mentioning the fact that we are without senior staff writer David Evans, because he's in the skies flying southwards at the moment, where Colin Clark is waiting to receive him with open arms in Guanajuato, Mexico.
Yes. Yeah, no, I can't wait. We're here for the Race of Nations, which is happening later on this week. It's a fantastic place to come rallying. I've come out a day or so early, at least, because I just love this place. You've been here, George. You've been here a few times as well. It's just a wonderful place to come to. I'm really enjoying it. I'm staying in a nice little typical sort of guest house in Guanajuato, up in the hills just above the city itself. It's about a 10 or 15 minute walk. It's not a city, it's a town really, isn't it? Down into the town, I have to say.
They've got a cathedral, Colin, and by British standards, a cathedral makes a town a city.
It does, George. I think they've got more than one. They have some of the most impressive churches I've seen anywhere.
Let's be honest.
So this morning, I have to say a big thank you to you guys, because if we'd done the podcast at the normal time, I'd have been setting my alarm for midnight, which you know, I'd have done. But this is a far more civilized hour. But what I did this morning, I set my alarm for 7 o'clock, because at 8 o'clock local time, we were due to do our podcast. I thought, I'm going to walk down into town, get myself a coffee, walk back up the hill and be nice and prepared. So that's what I did. Wandered down into the town with the locals. Very pleasant indeed. Got down to the coffee shop, thought I better have two coffees, two takeaways, because one's never enough, is it? So then I'm walking back up the hill, and there's a little pasteleria or something like that. I don't know what they call them in Spanish. A little bakery. So I thought, I'll get a couple of croissants. Now, at this point, I'm walking up a very steep hill with my hands pretty full, pretty full. I eventually get to the guest house.
Can I ask what you're wearing, Colin? Because you're always very nicely turned out. Were you in your Dirtfish bright white shirt in the glorious sunshine?
Not quite. Black T-shirt, but I have my Dirtfish cap on. But at least as I'm fumbling for my keys in my pocket, what happens to the coffees?
Well, that's why I was wondering if you're wearing a nice white shirt, but you're not.
No, they both go tumbling down the blooming hill. My orange Dirtfish trainers now have an odour, eau de coffee about them. Coffee all over them. It's a terrible thing. Terrible thing. So
there's
coffeeless.
Cafe.
Yeah, coffeeless this morning. But anyway, I'll wake up very shortly, I'm sure.
What I focused in on that is we get team trainers, do we? Did you get any, George?
I've been to one rally for Dirtfish and I paid for it myself. Well, I didn't actually. It was paid for by another mission. I got some t-shirts. Colin went to all the bother. He drove 300 miles to bring me my team kit and the microphone holder and everything and all the kit. So it was very, very personal top service, Lisa, nice. But involved the spending of very little money.
As possible.
Trainers, as possible. I wouldn't have wanted them. I like my boots. When I'm on a rally, I like to wear boots because it's a tough environment and only the pretentious wear Jangles, Colin.
Stop wearing them, George. They're retired.
Oh, thank God. Thank God for that. Are you on to some manly boots now?
I've got some boots, George, like you. It depends on the destination. At least you know what it's like out here. There are rattlesnakes all over the place.
Yeah.
So I have a pair of boots if we're heading out into the stages. But no, I've got these nice orange trainers, and I saw them online. Mm-hmm. And I thought, that's a Dirtfish orange, that lovely burnt orange. And I did buy them myself. They're mine. But they're looking very secondhand. I might have to take them in the shower with me later on and give them a good scrub. Is that a good plan?
Well, just think about Kenya later in the year. There's lots of scorpions around and about in Kenya.
Right, Colin, we're going to move away from an image of Colin in the shower.
Okay.
We're going to talk about the Azores now, because I don't know about you, Luke, but I've kind of switched off now and actually want to start talking about some rallying.
It's like home economics instead. Right, instead of rallying. But we bring you everything on this podcast. That's part of the joy, I like to think.
Yeah, so let's focus on the rallying bit, shall we? And let's talk about the Azores. Such a beautiful event, usually with glorious, fantastic pictures. But Bex Williams actually did send me a picture of one of the camera crew. I looked like they were in about a force 12 gale.
I saw that photograph.
Absolutely
yeah.
Superb photograph of the conditions that they were out there preparing for the event on the ERC.
It was a great event, Luke, wasn't it? Tell us about
it. I did not take the cue there to start speaking. No, it was actually. This, I have to say as well, I know we've had discussions about the all-live system for ERC in recent weeks. This was my first time actually paying attention to it. So it was quite interesting to view it this regularly. And I have to say, you mentioned it already, but Azores, I think, is one of those rallies where everybody just wants to go. You see it on the TV and you just want to be there. It's fantastic. I don't know how the drivers do it, because if it was me, I'd be looking out the window with all the views and everything, not at the road ahead of me. But yeah, it was a challenging event. It was quite an interesting event from a competition perspective as well, which I'm sure we'll get into. But Ricardo Mora had the lead for, I think, pretty much the entire rally until Efren Lorena fantastically took about 13 seconds out of him in two stages. And I think by now we've all seen the celebrations with Efren and his team, the MRF guys. It was their first win in the ERC. It was, I think Colin tweeted it almost beat the actual performance of the driving. It was that great a celebration.
Well, yeah, it was something to watch. It really was. A very excitable character is the guy that's in charge of the MRF team. And fair play to them. They're very, very new into this level of rallying. I think they're now 3 years into ERC rallying. They bid for the tyre supplier for the WRC. They put in a fairly substantial bid for that. Didn't get it. MRF are very much an Indian-based company. And they produce a phenomenal number and range of tyres, from bicycle tyres to fighter jet tyres to motorbike tyres to obviously rally tyres. So they're a fairly large company, a family-owned company. And, they've put quite a bit of investment into rallying over the past 2 or 3 years. And you could see what it meant to them on that stop line. It was, is it fair to say it was comical? Is that a bit much? It was entertaining.
It ramped up. And that's what I find amazing, is there was like a canvas of celebration. They weren't sure if they'd won. And then they were sure and it got bigger. And then it just kept on going. It was, something. But
it did. And I have to say, the celebrations aside, You know, what did I make of the rally? Well, you've said, look, it is a spectacular place. I've been rallying there a couple of times. The reason you don't spend the whole time looking at the scenery is you don't actually see much of it, because the vast majority of the stages there are through the lanes, and they're all lanes. They're like, if you're in the UK when you go down to Devon and Cornwall, and who is wandering around in the background?
George, we can
hear
you.
George Donaldson? George Donaldson, he's a... That's all right, don't mind. You're a busy boy. But the lanes there are very much like the lanes of Devon and Cornwall. You know, they've got high banks and hedges on the top of them. So you don't actually see an awful lot other than the lanes for an awful lot of the kilometres. But, you know, it is a great, great event. And the Portuguese love it. And there was a big, big entry of Portuguese drivers with our five cars. Moura is the local Azorean driver, and he's been champion out there many, many times in the past. And I don't know what happened to him on that final stage, Luke, but I got the feeling that he in the last two stages tried to manage things and managed it very badly. You know, I'm not so sure that the Spaniards upped his pace that much. I just think Moura got his strategy wrong.
Yeah, the interview at the end of the second last stage, he seemed to suggest that he was just taking it easy, because naturally when you see the split times come in, people start to panic. Like, is there a problem? Is he in trouble? But no, he seemed very calm about it. He seemed very sure that he had it all under control. And who are we to doubt him? Because, as Colin mentioned, I think it's 10 Azorean championships he's won before. So he knows what he's doing in that part of the world in a rally car. But yeah, the pace on I think he was... I need to double-check it, actually. But on the last stage, I think he was third fastest. So it wasn't a terrible, terrible time. But F. Rennie, he seemed to have the bit between his teeth, because he was miles faster than anybody on the power stage. And it was strange because he hadn't won a stage all weekend. He just sat there. He'd almost done what you'd almost call the Elvin Evans role in the WRC. He was just always there, just ready to take the podium position. But he sensed a chance, and he took it brilliantly. So he has to be now. And it's hard to tell with the ERC, because we've only been in Portugal, so we've had a lot of Portuguese drivers there. But he has to be now one of the favourites for the championship, I think.
Yeah, I'd agree with you on that. He has to be one of the favourites. And... you know, I'm still undecided about ERC. I really am. And I'm still undecided about the many things around the ERC. But, you know, what I do like is the emergence of young talent. And I'm always, always absolutely delighted to support young talent. And in your Efren and Wagner, it looks as if maybe we've got a couple of talented youngsters there who have the potential to push on. And that's what we kind of got to hope that ERC starts to provide for us, is this proving ground for these young drivers. You know, you look at John Armstrong as well in the Rally 3 car. He set a few top 10 times in the Rally 3 car out there. So, you know, there is hope, there is potential. I think we're far from the finished product with the all live coverage of it. But that will develop, as we said at the end of the opening round. It will develop. And I would still like to see them trying some new things with that, some new innovations. You know, there's a lot of rallying now that we can watch. And there has to be a compelling reason for us to watch it, to take time out of our busy schedules to watch it. You know, and I think that they need to look at some ideas, some innovations, mix things up a little bit in the way that they cover the rally. And, you know, maybe they've got a winner there. I don't know. I don't know. It will all depend on characters, coverage, competition, CCC, bang. That was pretty good for this time of the morning.
Is that just because it's Colin Clark as well? CC, you want to add that in there as well? Well, we'll see the season unfold and keep an eye on how things develop there as well. So we might as well move on to Mexico now, Colin. We've done the pretty bit. We've done the picture bit. You're heading off to León later today, I understand.
Yeah, to León, which is where the service park is. And it always is. It's a magnificent service park here. For many years, it was inside the... What do they call it? I suppose they call it a convention centre. Massive.
No, it had a much better name, didn't it?
No, it was called the Polyforum. It's called the Polyforum.
That was it, yeah.
I don't know what we... It is kind of an exhibition area, I suppose. And for many, many years, the service park was inside. And then it was nice to be inside, but then it was always a bit noisy, a bit fumey. So they've moved it outside into the grounds just outside the Polyforum. And it's a great place. You know, León is a very big and bustling city. It's one of the biggest, not I think the second biggest city in Mexico. But the big, big thing with Rally Mexico is always the atmosphere. You get the most incredibly passionate rally. I'm not going to call them fans, because they're not. They're spectators. There are people that, you know, won't really bat an eyelid or look at rallying for 363 days of the year. But the two or three days that the rally's on, They love it, and they come out and they provide some of the, you know, the best colour that we have in rallying anywhere in the world, and it's a great place to come to. And I think this innovation that the organisers of Rally Mexico have they've done it in the past. They did it a few years ago, but the Rally of Nations concept, it's going to be exciting. You know, there's going to be some good big names here, some good competition, great crowds, great stages.
Fill us in for those of us who haven't actually looked at the entry sheet,
Luke's got the list there.
That's pressure because I don't have the full list, but I can tell you.
I can tell you some headline acts.
Yeah. Harry Rovanpera is one, which I think is quite intriguing, mainly because obviously he's Cowie's father. I think we did joke with Cowie actually, if he was going to go out and watch his dad, and he said he might. I don't know if he's got a plan to come to Mexico or not. I'm guessing not. But Harry's there. We've got Mads Osberg is there. We have Adrian Formeau, of course, is there as well, which it's a big opportunity for him, this, actually, because he's not been to Mexico before, and not in a Rally 1 car or a WRC car. He's not been at all. So if Mexico returns to the World Championship, that we believe it may do, then it's a brilliant chance for him to learn the stages, because most of them will be used in the future. We've got, what's his name? We better cut this bit. Matthew Wilson. He'll be offended. So we've got the Wilson Senior as well. Matthew is coming to be part of Team GB. And that's the unique thing about this event. I just mentioned a nation there, but it is an overall competition and a rally like it would be for anybody else. But there's also the nations aspect, hence the name. But that, I think in itself, brings an entirely new proposition, because drivers are used to racing for their team. Like, so say you've got Formula, he's used to driving for M Sport. But to make a comparison to football, if you're a club footballer that plays for, say, Manchester United, the drivers are now playing for their country. And that's not something you tend to do as a motorsport competitor. So I think that'll be quite a unique thing. And it'll be interesting to see how the two pairings level out. Because you could well have the rally winner out front, but their teammate is nowhere, and the nation ends up coming like fourth or fifth. I just think that adds a nice, unique dynamic.
I love it. It's kind of like a Ryder Cup of rallying. Kind of. Yes. But I mean, I know that's many countries against the USA, but it does bring a totally different team element to it. Mm-hmm. You have to get on with your teammates, don't you?
You absolutely do. At least, you know what I've just done, and I'm feeling a little bit worried about it. I've just muted George. Oh dear, because we could hear him in the background. He's a busy man, George Donaldson. I've muted him. I should unmute him.
Unmute him and check he's okay. You all right, George?
He might get angry with me, mightn't he?
But it's fine, I can edit. Him.
Oh, hang on. No. Remove from call. Oh no, don't want to do that. How do I unmute him? Does he have to unmute himself?
Potentially.
I don't know how you did it, so
Oh no.
Colin Clark.
Doesn't give me the option.
Hang on.
Doesn't give me the option to unmute him.
I bet we can. There he is. There you go.
Back again.
I'm back with you. Back again. Apologies, guys. Actually, what I've got is a cat desperate to get out, so I was trying to...
I could hear the cat. I wasn't sure if it was a baby or a cat that was ready to kill something.
It's a cat trying to kill me, so I'll let him out. Let's him out now.
Was this the really tiny little cute ragdoll kitten?
That's it. He's now a medium-sized cat. He's a year old now, so they still grow for 2 years. Apparently, he's absolutely gorgeous.
Anyway.
Never thought I'd be soft on cats, guys, but I am.
Fair enough. We're talking about the Rally of Nations, George, and being part of
the
team player for your country.
To the whole thing. Yeah. I don't quite understand how that works. It sounds like a little bit contrived to me, but it's all fabulously good fun. And I'm going to have to root for the French team. I'm sorry, Matthew, Mr. Wilson, and whoever else is doing it. Didi Aurel, I'm just his biggest fan. So what's he driving?
This isn't a new thing, though, George. You say it's a bit contrived. I think it was back in 2009 that it was...
I know. It was contrived then as well, I guess.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
George, it's contrived, but you know, anything that's different.
I have to say, I don't think Rally Mexico needs to be contrived. It's such a significantly fantastic event on its own. Great stages, great atmosphere, great country, great people, great views, lovely food, nice weather. Yeah, it's got it all, hasn't it? Really. Oh, very expensive rental cars, as I recall. Has that changed, Colin?
No, geez, not at all, no, George. It's got worse. No. It's got the, you know, I'm like, I can fall out with rental car people anywhere in the world, but I fall out with them here just about on every single occasion I come here. It actually got to the point, George, were you in the car? So they rented me, it's the only place that I'll spend a little bit more money and get a four-wheel drive or a Jeep. You know, they're very rarely four-wheel drive. They're these American things that look like four-wheel drives, but in fact, two-wheel drives. But it's the only place that I'll rent one because otherwise you're guaranteed to get multiple punctures. Well, I rented this Jeep a few years ago. And you were there, George, a big white thing, a Jeep Cherokee or something.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
And it had one tire on it that was, I mean, it wasn't legal, but it just barely had, there was no tread on it, just slick rubber. Inevitably, first stage we go through, it punctures. It didn't just puncture, it completely ripped the tire. So I put the spare on, back down the main road. The great thing about Mexico is there's a tire repair shop or a tire shop just about on every single corner. So it wasn't too difficult to find somewhere. And it needed a whole new tire. So I put this whole new tire on it. Cost me quite a lot of money for the whole new tire. Went back, took the car back to the rental place. And the guy went, no, that's not the right tire. And I went, yeah, but it's a brand new tire. He said, no, that's a Pirelli tire. You know, we don't put Pirelli tires on these cars. I said, I don't care. That is a brand new tire. And what you gave me was a car with you would barely call it a tire. He went, no, that's not the right tire. I'm going to charge you your deposit for that. It was about 400 quid. And he was absolutely adamant. Yeah. He was absolutely adamant. And I said, that's absolutely fine. Have you got a knife? No, senor, I don't have a knife. I said, tell you what, just wait here. I'll go into the airport and I'll get a knife and I'll come back out. And I was so angry. I literally went to the airport, got a knife in the restaurant, came back. By the time I got back, the guy had spoken to his boss and went, no, senor, don't slash the tire. Don't slash it. We won't charge you for it. But it was one of those moments. It was one of those moments where I thought, dearie me. Dearie me, but hire cars are always an issue here. But I've left it to David Evans this time, so it's all down to David to sort the hire car out. Nothing to do with me.
So what did you take? I took a taxi from the airport the way to Guanajuato. You should have taken a bus, Colin. What were you thinking?
No, but George, here's the thing. I'm taking the bus back. I'm going back to Leon this afternoon. Yes. So I'm taking the bus back. I didn't get in until 11 o'clock at night. You don't take buses at that kind of time of night around here. So, no, I'm going to take the bus. I'm going to get a taxi from here to the bus station and then the bus to Leon, which will be a fun...
Uber. Is there not Uber experience there? They must have Uber in Mexico. Just take Uber. It's perfect.
God, I'm bored. I'm really bored.
Sorry. We're
Move
not
on
there
to talk about the competition.
Yeah. Yes. So the what's competition...
What's Didier driving?
Well, this is the thing, George, with you saying that, this is the big news, isn't it? We keep getting big announcements about who's coming out. And do you know what? There's some great drivers coming out for this. It is going to be fun. It's going to be something a little bit different. And you know, we've talked about it before. You know, innovation. We're talking about innovation in the ERC. Contrived innovation, call it what you like. I'd rather call it innovation. It is going to be dead interesting to follow and I think really exciting. And the French team with Formeau and Didier Auriol, who as a rally fan would not want to follow that?
I will be following it.
And at the same time, Harry Rovanperä. Oh, my word. I mean, it is going to be exciting. There's no question about that. You know, these guys are driving cars that they've had provided for them. And I'm not quite sure how it's going to work out in terms of levelling out the performance of the cars. We'll find that out later on in the week for you and we'll get back about that. But it doesn't matter. To me, it doesn't matter. Just seeing the likes of Rovanperä back out on these stages, some of the best gravel stages in the world. You know, Auriol out on the stages, you know, the young up-and-coming Frenchman, you know, out on the stages, Formeau. It is going to be magnificent, and I can't wait for it. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Absolutely. And Matthew Wilson, I have to say, Matthew Wilson was an incredible talent, a rising talent, at that point in his career, you know, shortly before he gave up. He plateaued at some point. I don't know why he plateaued. I can imagine why he might have plateaued, but I never discussed it with him. But, you know, he was a phenomenal talent that was capable of producing fastest times, but then he just didn't move to the next level. That last tiny little step he did, he chose not to make it, I think, is the bottom line. It'd be an interesting chat with him at some point. But a great talent and, you know, super driver, lots and lots of ability. So he'll go out there and have an absolute blast as well. And Didier just drives for pure pleasure.
I always thought about Matthew Wilson is that he never got the credit for the talent that he had. And we're kind of skirting around the issue here. I think that you look, I think he had one crash and he had a huge crash in the UK that he was very fortunate to walk away from. But in the World Rally Championship, he only had really one crash of any substance, and that was in Sweden. If you're going to crash your car in Sweden and put it into a snowbank, which he did end on his roof, I think, in a snowbank somewhere. He never crashed. He was very, very aware of not crashing that car, not costing M Sport any more money than he had to. But his talent was, he was a solid, dependable, quick driver. And he never got the recognition for that. And I remember when he came back, when I was covering the British Rally Championship, he did a round there and he was bang on the pace against the best of British youngsters. He did it again last year. He came back into the British Championship and, you know, and he was right up there with some drivers who are really, really highly considered in terms of young talent. And he got back in the car and he was quick. There is no question that Matthew Wilson is a top class driver. And yeah, that team, because tell me, it's Tom, help us out here, Luke, the second English driver, Tom Williams. It is nice to see, isn't it, with the French, you've got the experienced driver, the younger driver. The same with Finland. You've got Harri Rovanperä and a young Finnish driver competing. You with the English team, you've got Matthew Wilson and Tom Williams. And Tom's ploughing his rallying furrow, if you like, in the States these days, or this year. And it'll be interesting to see how he gets on. He's competed out here as well before. So the concept's great and the team structures are great. And yeah, as I say, I'm looking forward to it.
There's only one thing wrong with Matthew's entry, is that I'm not co-driving for him. What was he thinking about?
Who is co-driving for him?
I think it's Stuart Loudon that's co-driving
Okay, that's better than me. That's better than me, without a doubt. But I would have been good fun with him. He would have had fun with me. I like to go quick.
He gets biscuits from Stuart Loudon, doesn't he?
I was going to say.
Look, I could have brought a couple of biscuits. So okay. No, yeah. I could have found some McVitie's to bring.
The man who sticks the chocolate on the chocolate machine at the Tunnock's Tea Cake Factory is always going to win out.
He brings a sack full of tea cakes with him. I don't know how they'll do in the heat. But George, talk about going quick. remember the time that we hired that car. What is the car out here? It's like an old Nissan, isn't it? The most basic car you've ever driven. But Nissan imported hundreds of thousands, if not millions of them.
Was it a Nissan Sunny or a Primera or something like that, wasn't it?
It was a real, real basic thing. And I'd hired it, and you weren't on the insurance. And I remember we were up on the Kubeletti stage, and it was the Kubeletti stage before they'd paved the road. So it went almost all the way up to Kubeletti. It's the most incredible monument with a statue of Christ on top. And it absolutely towers over everything in the Vanuatu region. The most spectacular stop line I have ever stood at anywhere. Unfortunately, they don't use it anymore because, as I say, they've paved the roads. I remember doing the recce there with you, and you got so frustrated with me because I was trying to drive and be nice and tidy and neat on the stage. And we went to have a look. We went about 6 or 7 Ks out the stage. And you went, Colin, just move over. Get out. I'll drive it back. And oh my God. Oh, it was terrifying. Honestly, this car had probably never seen anything like it. In fact, it hadn't seen anything like it. You absolutely thrashed the pants off the poor wee thing and terrified me all the way back.
I let it breathe, Colin. The car just needed to breathe. It just needed to be let off the leash and breathe a little bit. I let it off the leash. It was a happy car.
It took us 7 or 8 minutes to get out there and about 3 to get back.
I think it is, they were actually built like tanks anyway. Was it Mexico where one of our colleagues accidentally locked the keys in the boot? And then
That was Argentina.
Couldn't get into the car. Tried everything to get into the boot of the car. Took the back seats out and found that it was welded.
God, no.
I think ended up to smash the lock off the boot to actually get in there to get the keys.
That sounds
out.
Expensive. Another place that's expensive to rent cars too.
Yeah, that was somebody having a very bad weekend. Anyway, so yeah, we'll keep an eye on dirtfish.com for plenty of details of what's going to be happening at the Rally of Nations in Mexico. Colin will be doing his thing. And David Evans will be doing his thing. And while you're on the website, don't forget to check out all the content from the Women in Motorsport Month on dirtfish.com. There's some great stuff. And there's also some content going to be heading up there very soon once I've finished doing some editing. We'll be hearing more from Michelle Mouton and Pernille Solberg as well. And if you've missed any of the articles, they're there for you to read and enjoy. And it is great stuff. So, yeah, go back, check it, read it. Enjoy it, so you know what WIM stands for. Anyway.
Absolutely. And also, just in the spirit of the last little bit of Women's Month, we've talked about Mr. Lorena doing such a great job. Let's not forget to mention his co-driver, the lovely Sarah Fernandez. Great job all round, ladies. And once again, rallying, proving that it's very, very inclusive for women. And I always think it's absolutely, you know, I think our sport is open to women. So any women listening, any men listening with girlfriends or maybe could be interested in motorsport, for goodness sakes, leverage them into it. We'll give you all the help we can to get them in, because there's a great opportunity. Great opportunities.
And obviously on Dirtfish, we're covering the Otago Rally in a few weeks' time, actually, the week after the Rally of Nations. And do you know what? They published the entry list, I think it was last week, and I wasn't surprised because I've been out to Otago and I've seen this in operation. But there were so many women on the entry list for Otago. It was absolutely fabulous to see. Now, Luke, I kind of set you boys a wee bit of a task to write an article about that. How are you getting on with that article?
It should actually be... I believe by the time this podcast comes out, it will be on the website.
Hey.
So
fabulous!
There we are.
It is something really special, and I'm sure your article covers it. But you know, I talked to the guys in Otago many times about it when I was out there, and subsequently, and you know, it's just the way, as George said, you know, it's girlfriends, it's daughters, it's sons, it's families that come rallying. It's not just the dads that go out rallying; it's the whole family that goes rallying. And take a look at that entry list and have a little read of the article when it comes out later this week, because they're doing something very, very special in that part of the world in terms of inclusivity in rallying. And it's working. It's clearly working. And it'll be great to see all those women on that entry list when Otago kicks off in just a few weeks' time.
Fantastic. Look forward to the time that that's not a surprise and it's just the norm. Right, let's move on to the Qatar Baja Meekin Sordo. Luke.
Well, it was interesting, this. It was interesting because I believe they were both, at least Chris was running under, like, Nasser Al-Attiyah's Academy of Drivers, which in itself I think is quite intriguing. But it was a lot better for Meek, it has to be said, the event. There were no sort of issues for him this time, no rolls or anything like that. It was a very good performance, actually. I believe he was fourth overall and first in his class, which was his first ever win of any kind of class or anything in this kind of off-road racing. So it was a very good event for him. Danny was actually was very quick. It was his first ever rally raid event. To be honest, it wasn't something I thought was on his radar at all. So it's interesting that he's gone out and done that. I don't know if it points to anything in the future, but either way, I believe he was quicker than Chris and up very near the top of the class at the beginning, and then had quite a few navigational issues, shall we call them. I think he missed about three waypoints in a row and lost about 45 minutes as a result. So that was it.
That would explain why he was quicker, Luke.
Well, I like to think he was quicker on one of the tests where this didn't happen, but I don't know. I'm not informed enough, so I'll plead Danny's case for him then. but yeah, it was interesting to see the two of them, because we know that Chris and Danny obviously have a very good friendship as well, and they used to be teammates at Mini, of course, so I don't know, it's quite nice to have them both out doing that sort of thing.
I think it's really interesting, and it is, you know, the surprise was Danny Sordo on that entry list. Chris Meek has been around the peripheries for a couple of years now, hasn't he, off the off-road with obviously his entry into Dakar and various other bits and pieces. But Sordo, we weren't expecting maybe at this point to see him. But I think you'll see more and more drivers going out and trying their hand at Baja. And I think as those events, you know, there's a world championship to be won there now. And it's fairly well funded in some areas. There's more manufacturer interest as well in that type of sport. But it's such a different sport. I mean, we saw it with... It was Mikkelsen, wasn't it? Mikkelsen was kind of parachuted in at the last moment to Dakar with zero experience of this type of off-road rallying. And it's terrifying. George, you'll know what it's like. You've been out in the desert enough. When you're following waypoints across the desert, and, you know, okay, at times you're following tracks, but a lot of the time you're just going with the rolling dunes. And there's a real technique in that. Mikkelsen went out to Saudi Arabia for Dakar, was blindingly quick, I think, through the first stage, and then binned it on the second stage. Because you can't, it's not about speed. It's always about speed, but it's not about flat out speed. It's about managing your speed, managing the risk, understanding the dunes, understanding the jeopardy in the dunes. So Mikkelsen found that to his cost very much in Dakar. And it's a learning process. And Meek's got a little bit more learning under his belt than obviously Sordo's got.
I think there's another interesting factor there, Colin. You're absolutely right with everything you say. And for me, another massive factor is the driver contributing to the navigation. Now, I know that sounds like a slightly odd thing to say, but so the co-driver's down there looking at his road book, which is, you know, sometimes it's just, you know, got, you know, third dune on the left with a funny hump on the top. Not quite, but I mean, I've never done one of these events, but I've seen some of the road books, and it's quite difficult. And I suspect, and again, having talked to a number of drivers that have done it, Andrew Cowan amongst that, the driver can definitely contribute to the navigation without a doubt at all. It can be a huge difference. So, you know, Chris has now done a few of these events and he'll understand that. He's a clever cookie. He'll have understood that and he will have contributed not just to these driving skills, but also to make the team work inside the car, to lift the load on the co-driver, to help him to identify those very difficult points, to, you know, figure out, you know, saying, you know, the co-driver will be looking, saying, right, 9.8 kilometres, we should be coming to a Y junction and branch left. And the driver to say, actually, you know, I mean, again, if it's wheel driven, I'm not quite sure how the trip meters and these things work. I think they're all GPS now, so it should be easier. But GPS trip meters, they have their own problems, because if you've had a spin out or not quite gone the right way some point, they're very, very difficult to reset, pause and restart. Difficult to do that on all the ones I've used. Again, they might have better kit, but I think they're quite rigid about what they're allowed in respect of that. But a driver can say, actually, I think we've maybe not quite got to that point yet. I think I've been spinning the wheels a bit too much or something, you know. But my point being is the driver can definitely contribute to lift the load and make it easier for the co-driver. 100% sure that they can. And that would be a factor for Danny and failing and Chris succeeding. So all power to Chris for that one.
I agree with you totally, George. And it's a real specialist discipline for co-drivers as well. And
it is, massively.
We have seen a bit of crossover. And, you know, Michael Orr with Yazid Al-Raji, Michael Orr was very much a stage navigator and the preferred navigator of choice for Yazid. But, you know, as Yazid's career moved away from stage rallying and more into cross-country, he wanted to take Michael with him, but he couldn't. You know, he couldn't because Michael just didn't have that experience. But what Michael did was he went down. He went away, if you like. He did his homework. He did his learning and he's built up his experience. And he's now a very, very competent off-road navigator. But you don't often see crossover. We saw it with Daniel Elena. And Elena really, really struggled with Sebastian Loeb. And it's such a specific discipline and it requires a totally different approach from stage rallying navigation. And I find the whole thing fascinating. I love it. And I think there's an awful lot of potential in this new off-road world championship. What do they call it, Luke?
It's got like a short name of the W2RC, but I think it's just World Rally Raid Championship.
W2RC, and I get confused with WRC2 every time I read that. I keep thinking, why are they writing about WRC2? Oh no, hang on a minute, it's me reading it wrong. But yeah, it's fascinating stuff. And as I say, it'll be interesting to see how that championship develops over the coming years, and how many, you know, top line rally drivers we get maybe moving into it.
It's nice to see that we're not losing people from the sport, that they are finding a way to continue competition when they've moved away from the top level of the WRC. So yeah, it's good to see. One other thing I want us to squeeze in before we're finished, and Colin, you mentioned this, it was Andrew Wheatley's comments about the 2025 regulations, saying that they will be an evolution, not a revolution. That's something I would have expected him to say 5 years ago, not 3 years' time.
I'm not on top of it enough, really, but it does worry me a little bit. Your hybrid.
Well, I can understand it.
Go on, George.
Well, I can understand it. Well, basically, you know, we've shifted to a hybrid formula, and okay, we've had one reasonably trouble-free event and one rather troubled event where a few things went wrong. Happily, at least FIA have reacted to it and they've made a change. You could argue that black and blue. I think we've already done that. I think it's a fair enough change that they've tried to instigate. And what they'll try and do now is, you know, moving forward, in there's the political aspects of moving towards electric. There's various drives going on to make certain things happen, but realistically, the smart practicality was going to be plug-in hybrids. So I would like to see us develop what we've currently got to make the hybrid aspect of it more meaningful, perhaps, and more related to what the road cars are coming. And I imagine that's what they're going to do. We'll shift to maybe a slightly bigger battery or a cleverer system that will be developed. And now, if let's assume that this crowd that are doing it at the moment, what are they called? Compact Dynamics. You know, very competent crew by all accounts, although I made some comment about some of the safety systems that they didn't seem to have installed. But as I said at the time also, there can be complexities with that. But what you would like to do is say, right, they're getting the rally experience, they're understanding the environment, they'll now be able to tailor a much better system for the next evolution of the rules that will be more relevant. And I would like to see rallying at the bleeding edge of car development, as it used to be back in the early days of rallying. Yeah. That might not be a practical reality these days with the way that cars are now developed. But it would still be nice to see it somewhere up at the front, proving that these things can work and have a practical application. And I think it would be very, very beneficial for the sport to be in that position. And it sounds to me like that's what they're doing. So I'm happy with the concept of evolution. Very, very happy to hear that.
What do you, Luke? Yeah. What about you, Luke?
I think it does probably... I agree with George, really, to be very succinct about it. But I think from a cost perspective as well, I think if they're going to, given these rules, the Rally 1 rules, are only ever meant to be around for 3 years, if they're having to go with something completely different again, that'd be quite a difficult buy-in for manufacturers, particularly the ones that have spent so much. You look at M Sport and Ford in particular, because we know they've not always had the budget of their two rivals. And to invest that much again in another brand new car would be quite a big ask. As George basically touched upon, I think the key is, I think we're set with the way the internal combustion engine works and the aerodynamics and all the rest of it. It's what the extra propulsion is going to be. Are we going to get rid of the internal combustion engine altogether? Are we going to have the teams developing their own hybrid units? Are we going to go for something completely different? I don't know. But I'm glad it's not me making that decision, put it that way. It's not an easy thing to have the foresight to get it right for the world in 3 years' time, because we all know how quickly the world moves. The last couple of years have proved that, if nothing else.
Well, that's exactly right. But, you know, this is a three-year... I don't even know if it's been confirmed. It was a three-year homologation cycle. That in itself is unusual. They're normally five-year homologation cycles. So a decision was made to reduce the period of homologation for the Rally 1 car. Maybe in recognition that we needed to do something more. In fact, I guess that's almost certainly why they've gone with a three-year homologation. George, I'm coming around to your way of thinking as well. You know, and I suppose to Andrew Wheatley's way of thinking. You know, an evolution is good, but can you have a revolutionary evolution?
Of course you can.
They could go hydrogen. George, what I want to, you know, you mentioned quite a while back now, you know, with the electric boost, with the electric power that's created by the hybrid unit, you know, you can use that in different ways. And I remember we talked once about, well, you know, what about awarding extra points or time, giving time back for extra use of the hybrid? So if you choose not to use the hybrid in the stages, but you choose to use it on the road sections, and you get more Ks of road section use. Remember you talked about that? I thought, yeah, that's there's something.
Yeah,
in
I mean, I don't know. I must have been, you know, spitballing, because it sounds awful.
it does sound awful, but the way you described it, I thought, yeah, there's some sense in that somewhere. You know, someone mentioned to me the other day, if we do stay with this formula and we do go with an evolution, you know, what about a full stage in electric? So the power stage in electric mode. You know, let's get to the point where they can do that kind of thing. Where
Colin, that's great, yeah.
We had 600 meters of electric power. Now, I might be wrong with that, but that's the figure I read. 600 meters of full electric in Sweden. you know, I mean, it just lays us open to ridicule. It really does.
Yeah, when it does, you do actually, like yeah.
So we need to, if we're going to stay with the hybrid, it can't just be your slight evolution. It's got to be a radical evolution of the hybrid. And there maybe have to be some, again, you know, the word I used earlier, innovations in the way that we use it, innovations in the way that we reward. You know, the big problem with all electric, from what I understand, and electric mapping is that, you know, you can use it in certain places and you can use all of it and you can have incredible speed, but, you know, it's very limited. So, you know, it's about how you manage that, the use of that electric power. You know, let's have a look at that. Let's have a look at how we reward teams potentially for using more electric. And you know, as I say, George, you did mention it a wee while back. I liked it, but you did put it better. Your road sections, using more electric, you get rewarded in some way for that, in some way. You know, and that is it. That's for me. If we can find an evolution that takes us forward in that way, then you know, I think it's not
that has a possibility. And the other point you've made very elegantly there, Colin, is that we've no idea which way the technology is going to go. You know, the world of vehicle engineering, of just engineering full stop, is incredibly innovative, and who knows that we won't develop another type of fuel that will allow us to continue using internal combustion engines, which normally produces a nitrous dioxide or nitrous oxide as a byproduct of burning any hydrocarbon fuel. But there's possibilities of developing that in a different way. Who knows? I mean, you know, we're talking about hydrogen fuel cells. Well, I know that, is it JCB have just developed one of their JCB engines. So the JCB is like a, what do you call them, backhoes for people that are not earth movers. So small earth movers, Caterpillar do them, JCB do them, I think Case do them. There's a lot of different manufacturers of these backhoes. They've got a shovel on the front and a backhoe on the back, used on building sites when they're building houses and things that are multi-purpose machines. JCB, British manufacturer, have made one they've converted a diesel engine to run with hydrogen gas. So it basically runs as a petrol engine because it'll have spark ignition. And it runs on hydrogen gas, which can be refilled relatively quickly. It doesn't need recharged. Recharging fuel cells takes time. Recharging just a gas pressure cylinder in a JCB is much, much quicker. So their downtime is zero by comparison to that of an electric or a hydrogen fuel cell. So that's a really interesting innovation. And hydrogen, you know, you get out of water, electricity, a catalyst, and you've got the gas. The expensive part of that, I believe, is compressing it, cooling it, and compressing it and putting it into tanks. That's what takes the energy. Getting the actual hydrogen gas out of the water, I understand, is moderately simple. And I'm saying that very much as a lay person, so I'm prepared to be shot down. I can feel I can feel daggers in my back already. Interesting technology could come and shake up our sport, and I would like to think that we'll be dynamic enough to allow that to happen. And I believe that the hybrid option we've got at the moment will allow that to happen. I hope.
What will be the success of the hybrid at the start, you know, with these regulations, when Monsieur Maton was the one championing them? You know, the success was to be judged on the new manufacturers that we brought into the sport. Mm-hmm. We lost one. We started with four.
We lost Mr. Maton, didn't we? We did.
But, you know, what is the success of these regulations? How do we judge the success? Do we judge it on new manufacturers? Do we judge it on the fact that the sport, at this highest level, just to sustaining itself, you know, is that in itself a success? I think
the big thing, if you're going to measure it from the manufacturer point of view, the key element there will be the relevance of it. We've already discussed that, and the cost. Well, these cars are cheaper to make, but I still think there's a little bit more to do on that. But again, I'm only thinking that because I don't have the insights that are really required to 100% say that. But I would like to see cars down at the cost of an R5 car still. That's what I'd like to see the car cost at.
Wow. Well, the hybrid unit costs almost as much as an R5 car, George.
That price will be coming down as it becomes more accessible, surely. We are kind of running out of time, guys. Is there anything anybody feels we haven't covered that we need to add in to this week's episode before Colin goes off to find his bus?
I'm looking forward to
we
that.
We want photos of that, by the way, on the
Colin,
bus.
Colin, why would you be going into Lyon when you're already in Guanajuato, which is very pretty and beautiful in the evenings, beautiful at all times of the day, with lots of nice restaurants?
George, I think he's actually going to where the nice event is, George.
Well, it won't be started yet.
To actually do some
that's
work.
100% correct.
Oh, he's going to go and work. Sorry. It never occurred to me you would work, Colin. And I meant that not in any other way than I think of Mexico.
Luke would be doing lots of work by now.
Yeah. No, me too. I would be with Luke.
Doing lots and lots of work. Lots and lots and lots, honestly. But no, I used to always stay here during the rally. I stayed in Guanajuato. If you get the right place, it's got easy access in and out. It's a great place to stay. And Leon's a nice enough place, but it's an industrial town. It's a big city, whereas Guanajuato is a World Heritage listed place, and it is just very, very special. So
I have to say, though, I did go out for dinner. The first night I went out for dinner in Lyon with my colleagues, and it was this big restaurant with big groups of families and people. And then the mariachi bands are in Lyon, and they all turn up at the restaurant, and there was a massive singing competition going off between the tables. So the mariachi band would wander over to one table and someone would stand up and sing very, very proudly and fabulously, and then issue a challenge to somebody else in the room. It was brilliant. What a way to be welcome to Mexico.
Yeah, I just
like to eat my dinner. Thanks, Lisa. I'm not looking for entertainment.
Here, George, I was reminded by my little brother about our favourite restaurant, the Pampas restaurant, just along from the service park. That feeds you half a cow every time you go in there. So that's where I might go tonight, George, and send you a picture from there.
That's a Brazilian place. The Pampas is the Brazilian place, yeah. It's three restaurants removed from the ones that are right adjacent to the service park. So it's back south about 500 metres and then west about a kilometre. And not too many people know about it. You didn't used to find too many people from teams in it. Just a few here and there that were told about it. But it was sufficiently off the main drag to not suffer from the tourist price hiking, which all the restaurants along the main road in and out of Lyon did anywhere near the service park. All of a sudden, the prices were double on the Wednesday than they would be on the Monday when you arrived. So the Pampas was one of the fair restaurants. Yeah, very nice.
You might have just ruined that for future years, George. You might have just completely uncovered
Pampas,
that hidden gem status.
They knew it, and they did a fine caipirinho as well. I've been
driven
back to my hotel by Colin on several occasions, having indulged
George,
in
you only need one
more
of those
than a couple
to actually
of
find
those
your legs go a bit wobbly.
It's worked out, George. You're talking about a different restaurant. I'm listening to your instructions, thinking, how does he do this off the top of his head? And I'm thinking, and as you're giving those instructions, I'm following the route in my head. You go, so you come out of Salisbury, turn right, you go straight down the road, and it's just on the left. Is that south? Is that west? No, it's east.
No,
and you're thinking of Brazil 2000. Brazil 2000 was the one that did all
of
the...
No, that's the expensive one, I think. I'm just going to wait
until I start fading you down at the end of the
podcast.
Yeah,
fade us down.
But it is another possibility to add to the website that potentially on dirtfish.com, not only will we be covering the events, we'll also be covering the restaurants that you should be looking for when you travel abroad to finally get back out properly, when we finally shake off all this COVID-19 regulations and stuff and money starts flowing into our pockets again and we can finally go out to the events. But yeah, so you guys just keep that in mind that you need to do a restaurant column as well.
No, Lisa, well, yes, I'm happy to do that, but it's an open invitation to all our Dirtfish Rally friends. You know, if you are ever on a rally and you want to come to a restaurant, give us a shout, you know, and we'll take you there. Well, we won't take you and pay for it, clearly. Oh, dearie me.
Well, that was quick.
That's pushing it a wee bit, you know.
We will recommend.
Come and experience. Yeah, we'll recommend that you come and experience some of the wonderful places that George and I have discovered. George is legendary in the World Rally Championship for finding restaurants. And notice that I didn't say finding good restaurants there, Lise.
You just said
it's hit and miss. It's hit and miss with George. He's a man who likes to take a risk. So, you know, it's like, as he said, we'll go past the restaurant, it'll be packed and it'll be full of rally people. Oh, no, we're not going in there. Oh, no, no, no. So we'll go and we'll find a little local place full of local people. And, okay, maybe, what, George, 50, 60% of the time, he finds little gems. 30, 40% of the time,
Colin, it is the Pampas. It is the Pampas, and it is...
Right.
Luke, it's been an absolute pleasure listening to you on Spin the Rally Pod once again for your wisdom
you
and your insight.
We could just leave now, couldn't we? And let them just have the conversation.
These two, yeah.
500 metres south, Colin.
Bye, Lise.
This is how it goes on the whole time. Thank you for listening to this episode of Spin the Rally Pod. We will be back with more. Colin and David will be reporting back from Mexico. George will be making sure that they did go to the correct restaurant and enjoy their meal there. And Luke will be just keeping us all sane with exactly the stuff we really need to know. So thanks for listening to this episode. Thanks, guys.
We'll speak to you.
Lovely to have you back.
Thank you very much.